You know, it's not, even though I say it throughout the year, this is super, as they say, legit. It's that most wonderful time of the year, and it's that most wonderful time of the day when we get to talk to Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch. Yo, mensch. What's going on?
Hello, hello. So I'm being menschy today because it's Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do have a point of view on Christmas because I'm Jewish. And you know, the old joke, it's not really a joke, it's the reality, is what the Jews do on Christmas? They eat Chinese and go to the movies. And the reason is, there is a reason. Let's say, the only restaurants that were open in the old days on Christmas were Chinese restaurants. Certainly Catholic Italians closed on Christmas. They were all home with their family. And then there were Jewish delicatessens, but, you know, it wasn't a real restaurant. So, pardon me?
When I first came up here, I thought, well, I was shocked how many people, nothing was open, and everyone had their own Christmas dinner going, and I was like, wait a second, not even, it shut like a drum.
Yeah, well, you know, I always remember, and it was because it wasn't very long ago, maybe 20 years ago, we went out on Christmas Day. We were picking up a friend who lived on the Upper East Side, and on our way up whatever avenue we went up, probably Third Avenue, on Christmas Day, there was no traffic, but there was nothing open except an occasional Chinese restaurant. So we left. I don't remember what, I think we went to a Chinese restaurant, but one we knew that was going to be open. So a bunch of Jews in a Chinese restaurant. And the reason you went to the movies is because the line for the good movies was less on Christmas Day because all the Gentiles, all the non-Jews, were home with their family. So anyway, that was my. But the fact is, in my personal life here, I had an aunt, my father's sister, who was a sort of, I have to say, Catholic wannabe. She even married a Polish Catholic man, who, by the way, would have happily, I know, because we talked about it, happily would have converted because he was very admiring of Jewish traditions and blah, blah, blah. But she loved to decorate. I think my aunt's love of Christmas was akin to her love of every other holiday, which was that she could very tacky decorations all through the house. But she was a great cook, my aunt, and she did make a great Christmas Day dinner, which we were all happy to go and celebrate with her and her Christmas tree. It was the only person in my family who had a Christmas tree and her other decorations. But she was my father and his sister did not get along all that well, but her token of love to him, once a year at least, was to make this gigantic bowl of chocolate pudding for him on Christmas Day when we went over to her house for dinner. That was always, no matter what other desserts she had, she always had this big bowl of chocolate pudding. So that, believe it or not, I associate chocolate pudding with Christmas. The other thing that she, by the way, I'm going to give you my recipe for chocolate pudding. It's a really easy one. And I make this pudding a couple times a year, not just once. Although now that I'm talking about it, I will certainly have to do it later today. In any case, the other thing that she made that was sensational that I've never been able to duplicate was what she called a fresh ham, a whole leg of pork. And she had it boned. And the big cavity that resulted from taking out the main bone, she filled with the bread stuffing. And it roasted with the bread stuffing in it. I don't know how she managed to get it as juicy as it was, at least on my memory is that it was really juicy pork. but she did. And I would have to go and ask her daughter, my cousin, about whatever else she made. I don't think my cousin has followed any of her mother's traditions. But anyway, I know she did not get my grandfather's famous potato salad recipe or coleslaw recipe. Anyway, so those are the things I associate with in my childhood, from my childhood, with Christmas. And, of course, a fruitcake came later. But my fruitcake experience was very rarefied. Now, Sylvia, what was Sylvia? I'm just Sylvia's... Sure. Early in my career, we're talking about the 1970s, a very important food person in New York was Sylvia Scher. Now, Sylvia was not a food writer, but she had a company that developed recipes for food companies and also did things like photo shoots for food companies. And Sylvia was very reliable. If you got a press release from Sylvia, you looked at it. Anyway, Sylvia lived in Murray Hill in Manhattan, and she had a townhouse that was the lower floors anyway, were turned over to being a photo studio, test kitchen. And every Christmas, Sylvia, who was Jewish, would give as a gift to the important food editors, of which I was one, I suppose. I was the, quote, executive food editor of the Daily News. Sylvia would bring you her fruitcake, and it came in a porcelain souffle dish, and it came up over the rim of the dish. It was a big fruitcake, but it was in a dish. Anyway, as the years went on, and Sylvia's business was not as successful as it was when I came around in the 70s, the dish got smaller and smaller. And I have all these dishes, and the plus side of them getting smaller and smaller over the years is that they nest beautifully in my closet. But I have every size souffle dish, porcelain souffle dish, all courtesy of Sylvia Scher. I'm not sure what she called the company. It might have just been called Sylvia Scher, if somebody wants to look it up. Sylvia ended up, late in life, marrying this lovely, lovely Japanese architect. And when I say late in life, she had to be in her 60s. And they lived happily ever after wherever they retired, I think Arizona, something like that. And he was, I must say, a real impressive gent. So the other way I think of Christmas is when I put my Neapolitan hat on. A lot of my cooking, you know, is stuff that I learned over the many years I was traveling back and forth from New York to southern Italy. This clam sauce. So let me start by saying, I have, for 40 years, I have been telling people there is no such thing as the seven fishes on Christmas Eve. Yes, they do eat fish, at least in the south of Italy and in Rome, which is, to me, the gateway to the south. They eat fish on Christmas Eve because it's a religious custom to not eat meat until after midnight mass. Then you can go home and feast on meat, but you don't. You wait until Christmas Day to do that. But Christmas Eve, in the South, it's called La Vigilia, the vigil. And the vigil is you're waiting for Christ's coming. Anyway, so they have any number, few or many fish dishes. Nobody counts them. The seven comes is Italian-American, and who knows where the number seven came from, except that seven is a special number, you know, the four corners of the earth plus the Trinity, to give one example of seven. So seven fish is an Italian-American thing. Now, all of a sudden, I see people saying, oh, did you know that this is only an Italian-American thing, that nobody in Italy has any idea? Well, as I said, I've been saying it for 40 years. So the and I laugh too when I hear about this, because I've been to Christmas Eve fish dinners in the south of Italy, and sometimes they're actually quite meager with fish, and not necessarily many, many courses. However, some of the courses are unrecognizable. If you go into an upper middle class home in Naples, you might get like salmon roe mousse, or I've had, believe it or not, pickled herring. You almost always get some kind of sardine or anchovy dish. And the one I think that is most universal is clam sauce, is linguine or spaghetti with a long pasta with clam sauce. Now, to me, clam sauce is oil and garlic, aglio olio with clams added, and some parsley, which you do in aglio olio too. Maybe some hot pepper, which you do in aglio olio too. And basically, there are a lot of dishes that are just olive oil, garlic, parsley, perhaps a bit of hot pepper, and pasta. And then you can add a vegetable. You could add clams. So with clams, you know, they've got, first of all, they've gotten very expensive. I just priced it out the other day. They were $1 a clam. So I would need $18 worth of clams, at least, to make a pasta for two people. So it seems expensive, especially when I can go to, you know what, I was going to say you go to a restaurant. However, restaurant pastas become very expensive, one. And two, I don't find many good spaghetti alla vongole, spaghetti with clam sauce. You know, it's an unusual, not an unusual dish, but it's a dish that's hard to find made well. It's sort of more disappointing than it is satisfying. So I recently decided I'm going to take this in my own hands, and I decided I was going to do like I did in my 20s, make it with canned clams. So it ends up not bad. I used the canned baby clams, the whole baby clams. You can also buy chopped clams, which are not as good, but they're okay. And as I said, it's really just olive oil, good olive oil. Sauté very briefly a lot of garlic. Now, for, I would say, a half a cup of, you don't even need a half a cup. Let's say a third of a cup of olive oil. You want at least six big cloves of garlic. And you can either chop them finely or slice them. I sometimes like to slice them. It's, first of all, quicker. But I like to, I don't mind getting a slice of garlic in my mouth. I like it, actually. So, and saute it very briefly, just until it's sort of, you get a little aroma out of the pan. And this is, I would say, over medium heat. And then add a half a cup of dry white vermouth. Now, I say dry white vermouth because I always have a bottle of dry white vermouth on the counter here, and I don't always have an open bottle of white wine. So you can use a half a cup of white wine if you have an open bottle. I wouldn't open a bottle just for this, although, of course, you may want to drink it with this. But I most often use vermouth. So I put in the vermouth. I let that sizzle around for a few minutes, and then add the liquid from the clams, not the clams themselves, and heat that up. And the clams go in at the very last minute. So cook your spaghetti for one can of clams and as much garlic as I said, whatever, five, six cloves of garlic, a third of a cup of olive oil. It's a half a pound of pasta. It's 2 4-ounce servings. If you want to extend that a little, you can make 3 4-ounce servings, like 12 ounces of pasta. You could do that. Anyway, make it al dente. drain it. I don't think you're going to have to save any pasta cooking liquid, but, you know, maybe you want to just in case. And put the pasta in the liquid from the clams, the oil. You can add your chopped parsley now. If you were going to have hot pepper in it, I would have cooked the hot pepper along with the garlic. And that's it. And this, and when the pasta is fully cooked, then toss in the clams. Now, this is the dish that people, Italians, go crazy when they see Americans add cheese to spaghetti with clam sauce. And I never do. But if you really, really have to have cheese, use pecorino. Use the salty, strong sheep's milk cheese. Don't put Parmigiano on it. Years ago, we're talking, I guess, the early 70s, maybe mid-70s, in Marcella Hazan's first book, she dictated that you should never put cheese on anything with fish. That's because she grew up in Parmigiano country. And Parmigiano doesn't go on fish. But there are other places in Italy that have other cheese that does go on fish. And I must say, the one other dish that I always find Italians say has to be on the Christmas Eve table is baklava in various forms, salt cod. Now, Americans, at least I would, I shouldn't say that. New Englanders love salt cod. In fact, until recently, the salt cod that I bought came in a box from Maine. Have you ever seen that in the store? Is it still there? I bet you it is. And that cod was nice, thick pieces of cod, which are perfect for baking. You've got to desalt them, which is to say...
Put them in the bathtub.
Pardon me?
Which is to say, put them in the bathtub.
No.
Or a big sink.
Put them in a bowl. Put the fillets in a big bowl, wash them off in cold water. And you can either just keep changing the water several times over the course of a day or maybe even two, depending on the cod. And I'll tell you how to know in a second. Or this is what you see in the fish markets in Italy, constantly running water. You put the fish in a bowl and you have a very thin stream of water continually drip into the bowl. And it'll sort of automatically be changing the water. So I actually like raw salt cod, meaning never cooked salt cod. And in fact, would do for a like-minded person, slice my desalted cod into thin slices, arrange it on a plate with some olive oil, lemon juice, and hot pepper. But so I'm not afraid of it because that's something I like to eat. So what you have to do is slice off a piece and taste it raw and see if it's too salty. I find that most people over-desalt, meaning they leave the fish characterless, and I don't want to do that. I would like it to say I am salt cod. So not that it has to be very salty. So these nice thick slabs of fish go into a baking dish that you've drizzled some olive oil in. And then you can, with your hand, crush a few, I don't really want to do this up, but sliced potatoes on the bottom of the baking dish, a 13-by-9-inch dish. Then put on the cod, then crush some tomatoes, not to make tomato sauce, but as a sort of seasoning on top of the salt cod. It won't need salt if you did this right. And then, and that's it. Drizzle a lot of olive oil over it. You can add olives. That's always a nice addition. And it looks good, you know, with the red tomato and purple olives. You want to use green olives, you can use green olives. And that's it. Cover the dish with foil. And stick it in the oven and bake until it's until the fish is flaky. And I have to say, It's a dangerous thing for me to make because I have been known to eat an entire dishful of this, although my appetite is less than it used to be. But I do like it. The potatoes, of course, become fabulous. You can put a little onion in there, too, if you like. So that's it. That's Christmas for a Jew.
That's a... That sounds actually really good.
Oh, it is. You like salt cod?
Well, I was going to ask you, but this isn't Christmassy exactly. I love tara masala. What is that?
Ooh, I love it too.
Yeah. Is that a long time?
You can buy it in a jar. Krinos, the K-R-I-N-O-S, ingredient company. They make very good tara masala. Since I'm the only one around here who eats it, I've been known to buy a jar for myself.
I understand.
It's usually fattening. So I used to make it with white bread you soaked in milk, and then you added it's a fish roe. I forget which fish it is, but the tarama is fish roe. Salata means salad.
Right.
And you whipped it all together with some olive oil and lemon juice, and it makes a really good dip spread. I love tara masala. You made me think about it. But as I said, lately I've only bought it, and it's not nearly as good as if you make it at home. I'm sure you can find good recipes for it on the Internet. So, you know, that's Christmas. But New Year is coming, and I also have foreign food ways for New Year's Eve, too. But we'll get to that next time.
That's right. We'll do that next time.
So, everybody, have a very Merry Christmas, a healthy holiday. Don't overdo it, but do it, is my advice.
This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch.
Go ahead.
This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.